Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. According to a 2019 report by the think tank Center for Governance and Political Studies, several Malaysian cities, including most parts of Klang, could be submerged due to rising sea levels within 30 years. Now, the most recent example of the impact of climate change was the December 2021 floods, during which more than 50 people were killed and thousands of others displaced across the country. But what is being done to avert another flooding disaster in the short term, but also to address the longer term effects of climate change? Charles Santiago, Member of Parliament for Klang, joins us now. Charles, you recently organised a seminar on the impact of climate change on coastal areas like Klang. And, you know, we're now 4 months since the December floods. I'm just wondering whether this seminar was a way to reinvigorate the urgency to address flood risk. I mean, this urgency we saw was top priority in the immediate aftermaths of the disaster.
Essentially, one of the purposes of this seminar was to create a sense of urgency, but also to indicate to government, households in Klang, as well as businesses, that we are in an intensive care unit situation in Klang at this time. And government's response, business response, and household response to the impending problem has to be today and now. It cannot be postponed to another day, though. Now, why do I say that, though? For example, the study that you talked about, the Center for Governance and Political Studies, there's also other studies that have been done by the National Hydraulic Institute of Malaysia, or NARIM. Both of them actually point to a similar direction, that there is a sea level rise in the areas of Port Klang, as well as in the coastal areas of Sungai Bernam, Sungai Besar, Sekinchan, Kuala Selangor, as well as Pulau Indah and Telugong as well. So the entire coastal area of Selangor is affected, and some parts more than the other. So, for example, the study by the Center for Governance and Political Studies showed that the increase in the sea level rise in 2020 was 1.35 to 2 meters. Whereas the projection for the 2040 for the next 20 years is 1.6 to 2.5 meters, which means there will be an increase of 8 feet of water, 2.5 meters of water in the areas that I mentioned, especially in Pulau Indah, Telugong, and the nearby areas. Now, just to give you a perspective, Klang has a population of 1.5 million. It is as big as Penang. It is, in terms of population, it is big as Penang, and it ranges from one side, from Pulau Indah, right up to Bukit Raja on the other side. That tells you how big, how spread out it is, and it is surrounded by the sea. It is surrounded by the sea. So whenever there is a sea level rise, it is encroaching into the space. And when it is encroaching into land space, it is hitting houses, it is hitting businesses, factories, and so on and so forth. This is a clear manifestation of climate change. So, for example, according to the recent studies that has come out as late as yesterday, it shows that if the meltdown in increases in Antarctica and Greenland, what the direct impact of this, that this will hasten this increase in sea levels. So this is another problem that we have to keep in mind. At the same time, what we see is a parallel development. That parallel development is the increase in rainfall. So in July 2021, it was 138 meters. In August of last year, 264 meters. September, it was 240 meters. October 205 meters, November 232, and of course December, as you know, it was 560 meters. In fact, this year itself, in January it was 181, and in February it's 171. And we had five different floods, the five floods in a period of 5 months. And of course, the worst one was in December. So we are seeing some very interesting developments and one that really requires urgent help. So the purpose of this meeting to answer the question is the need for urgency, the need for commitment, political will on the part of government to quickly move in and address the problem that we are looking at. And it should be done now.
Right, Charles, if I could just ask you this. I mean, you talk and you make a compelling case for some dramatic changes that are going to happen in the area. You're saying government and households and you know, and also different levels of government are going to have to act. But we live in a country, and I don't know if it's just unique to Malaysia, but we live in a country where we've had a pandemic. And then when we look at government response, we see, whereas the last budget, you know, had no appreciable increase in investment in healthcare, which was the thing we were all screaming about for 2 years. Government doesn't seem to respond to compelling arguments, to facts laid out before them. What's going to change the dynamic now? I mean, you say urgent, but, you know, government doesn't respond in that way.
I completely agree with you. You know, in Parliament in December last year, during the budget debate, and then in the special session on floods on January 20th, and in the recent debates in Parliament, the King's Speech, I had raised and I've asked 6 million ringgit from JKR to clean the JKR drains. Everywhere else in Malaysia, Klang, where you have everything except water in the drains. You know, you go to other countries like Japan and Korea, you only have water in the drains. But in Malaysia, you have bottles, you'll have furniture, you'll have a bed. You just name it, though. Your motorcycles also inside the bed, inside the drain. The bigger the drain, the more rubbish there is. So I said, hey, please give me 6 million, give it to JKR in order to clean up the drains. I also wrote a letter to the Menteri Besar of Selangor, asking him to instruct all the PBTs, local councils in the affected areas, to clean the local council drains. This will be the first measure, first response. And in fact, if the drains are clean, then at least you can reduce a bit of the flooding. Because right now, this as a result of clogging, you have waters that overflow into the roads, into the tamans, and so on. But the answer from JKR minister was, have you tried Gotong Royong? I mean, I'm like, is this really, I mean, are you thinking? And then I haven't got any response from the Selangor government. But I think, you know, this again points out a lack of urgency, though, a lack of urgency.
If I may just add to that, Charles, you know, in preparing for this interview, I was doing some research and I came across my old notes from an interview I did specifically looking at flood mitigation issues in Klang from May of 2012. That was 10 years ago. And I'm still talking and asking the same questions I am today. So what needs to change? Because apparently 10 years ago, it wasn't urgent enough. 10 years, currently today is not urgent enough. And I'm hoping that we're not waiting another 10 years to act for the people in Klang. What needs to change, Charles?
Well, the next 10 years, you have water submerging land. This is the fear. This is the real fear. And Klang has got two big ports. You have West Port and then you have North Port. And you have 10 other smaller ports. And the West Port is the biggest income earner for the Malaysian government, the Malaysian economy. If anything happens to Pulau Indah, then we are, pardon the expression, but that's one of the ways to get a message across to the government that they will participate in destroying the economy of the country. So it's in the government's interest to actually rebuild the drainage and irrigation in Port Klang and Klang in general. But let me just give you an example of the economic problem that was faced during the 3 days on 17th, 18th, 19th December, 3 days, where the massive floods disrupted the operations in Port Klang to the extent that it created a shortfall of 70% handlings in the port, and a break in the semiconductor supply chain that in turn contributed to global semiconductor supply shortages and caused some US automobile manufacturers to suspend operations. These were semiconductors that were coming from Taiwan, which was reprocessed in Port Klang. But because of the floods, it could not be done. So therefore, they could not export it to the United States. So already you can see in a globalized environment, when you have a flooding situation, it hampers business and it hampers growth of the particular country, particular area and country as well. So it's in the interest of the country.
Yes, Charles, we know that, you know, sometimes the interests of the country and the public don't align with political interests, which are much more short term, follow electoral cycles and perhaps very privatized. But I want to ask you, I mean, is the government going to have to wait to see investors fleeing the country because they see no, you know, no concrete attempts to deal with these questions, you know, relocating the factories to safer areas, or even, you know, Malaysian citizens moving out of Klang, thinking that in the long term, this is not a place that they can live?
Well, I think after the experience in Sri Muda, where the entire place was underwater for almost 7 or 8 days, I think people have started to move out of the place. Rentals have come down, people have moved out, and chances are the real estate will drop even further. That is why the suggestion that had come from the seminar was to reimagine or rethink and a new mitigation approach, which is to have a new drainage system for Klang. And we have it in the embryonic stage at this time. But what we need to do is to get experts to look at it and develop it further. A new drainage system, a drainage that will link the entire Klang as one whole, and linked to the rivers that we have. So this would require widening of the rivers that exist, deepening them as well. And also looking at Klang from in a holistic and a comprehensive fashion. Right now, the way it is dealt with, if you have a problem in that taman, they will solve that problem in that taman alone. But it is not linked to the next taman. And chances are the water is moving to the next taman and flooding the next taman, which is something that we should avoid at all costs. So we need to have a different view, a different comprehensive view, a new drainage system for Klang. And
Charles, you're a Pakatan MP. The state government of Selangor is a Pakatan government, 3 terms now. What level of competence or imagination have they applied in addressing these issues?
I think the state government has set up select some committees at the secretariat. And I'm sure that they're looking at the future of Port Klang. And sometimes these are all development strategies that they have put forward, but not enough in addressing the existing flooding situation, which is caused by the sea level rise, as well as high levels of rain. And as I said, these are very huge levels of rain. And the Jabatan Pengairan and Saliran tell me that if there is a rain more than 60 mm, then there'll be floods, no choice. That's 40 to 60 is all that Klang can accommodate. Anything more than that, it will start flooding. So I think the warning is already there for Selangor. The warning is already there for the local council, and the warning is already there for the federal council. I have a federal government. I've raised the issue with the federal government. I have actually fought very hard, and I've asked for 6 million. And the answer is, you know, why don't you think about Gotong Royong? I mean, think about that. I mean, can you imagine that kind of answer from a senior
minister? Yeah, so Charles, I mean, so if I can just follow on with that question of the Pakatan Harapan government of Selangor's response. People are getting tired of governments, you know, constantly, and politicians referring to select committees and, you know, deliberations. If we wait for governments and politicians to act, will it be too late for ordinary people? I mean, will they have to start taking matters into their own hands? I mean, you know, are there ways, and I know there's some talk of residents suing governments, whether the federal or the state level, in order to put some pressure on politicians to actually put their money where their mouths are?
Thanks for raising the issue, though. One of the hottest topics at the conference was, should there be a legal suit against the government? It was raised by a couple of people, both publicly and privately as well. And there has been ongoing discussions within the communities, within the resident associations and so on, who have to deal with this flooding every other month. So I just would like to report to you that discussions with lawyers are ongoing at this time. And once we're ready, we will file the cases.
All right, Charles, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. Appreciate your time. Charles Santiago, MP for Klang, joining us on the show. We're going to take a quick break and we will be back with more on this topic. Stay tuned to Consider This. Hello, thank you so much for staying with Shraddha and I on Consider This. Let's continue our look at climate change and its impact on urban settlements like Klang. We speak now to Ili Nadia Zulfaka. She is the co-founder of Klima Action Malaysia. Nadia, how do we relate climate change problems to people who live in areas like Klang? The real impact of climate change on people's lives. So it's not just a conceptual, it's not theoretical, but rather something that we should be worried about and seen as a real threat.
Hi, everyone. Good night. Thank you for having me on the show. First of all, we have to realize Klang is a coastal city. There's a projection going on stating that close to 50% of the world's population live within the 200 kilometers of a coastline, with projections suggesting this figure will rise up to 70% by 2025. So as more climate data knowledge is amassed, we know that coastal hazards are an urgent global concern, considering the increasing population pressure in coastal region, retreating coastline, coastal floodings, and rising seawater levels in low-lying areas. These are all expected to cause major loss and damage unless a radical adaptation approach occurs. So we have to understand the basic information. And of course, I like to speak a little bit more on the global temperature rise. We know it's rising. You know, we have to discuss about why this is happening. I think just talking about the reaction and the recovery efforts is adaptation, resilience, but we need to understand why it's happening. So the global temperature is rising. We all know that it's due to the amount of CO2 being pumped into the atmosphere, and also our addiction to coal and certainly to oil and gas is not ending soon. Of course, we have a few weeks ago, a massive ice shelf the size of New York City and Rome completely collapsed in the East Antarctica due to the heat waves of 40% degrees Celsius. So how does this relate to Klang? So I won't be too technical, but I do understand that this disrupts the planetary energy balance. This adds more water and moisture into the atmosphere, and this affects the Earth climatic system, and this intensifies hurricanes, typhoons, as well as the it affects the seasonal and so events like La Nina and El Nino. So the impacts are broad. We know this. Some are on the verge of tipping points. So there is an increase of frequency, extreme weather events that we are seeing in Klang, like storm surges and also heat waves. These are also global. So we have slow onset events like sea level rise as well. So as annual rainfall intensifies, we saw biblical rain as we have never seen before, and a sea level rise, and this too makes Klang's future in peril. And as stated in IPCC, climate action needs a systemic solution to address the non-climatic factors contributing to climate crisis, such as the bad governance, we have the accelerated urbanization, conflicts, war, like what we are seeing over in Ukraine, in Russia, the Russian invasion. So we have political instability, some due to systemic racist policies, social inequity, corruption. The IPCC even mentioned colonialism and corporate capture. So these are actions that we need to incorporate in our response to climate emergency.
Okay, Nadia, can I ask you what stops us from adopting, adaptation strategies? Is it the sheer cost I mean, if you look at Klang, and we just had the MP Charles Santiago speaking to us, saying it's an area the size of Penang. It's got 1.5 million people, industry, residential developments. To do those adaptations, I mean, the phenomenal cost, is that what is stopping us, or is it just a lack of political imagination?
Oh, certainly the answer varies a lot, but I do understand both of them contributes to the climate inaction that we are seeing right now. I think the Selangor state must build the capacity to extend, to seek external funding, such as the UN funding. And on designing a state-level adaptation plan, we saw Penang state, together with the collaboration with think tanks like Think City, has acquired some USD 10 million, that is around 41.4 million ringgit, from the World Bank Adaptation Fund to help finance the pilot plan of a nature-based approach to deal with climate impacts like flooding, stormwater management, reducing urban heat islands. So Penang has a specific ecosystem. And of course, with a focus to build partnership with marginalized and vulnerable communities. I think the reason why, Charles has mentioned about why is it important to include people in solutions, is because we need to build an inclusive climate action that is not only nice on policy papers, but also implementable and show results. Right now, it's just merely policy statements, and that is due to the policy inaction, right? We do believe that there is a lack of political will at play here. We have residents associations in Klang. Now Frontline is providing community scale solutions that does not need millions of ringgit, that can be part of the impact scenario planning for localities within cities, which can be upscaled with partnerships with local universities around Klang Valley, the local council, and of course with financing support. The finance support is extremely important. For example, the kind of issues that they can cover is the documentation of women living in urban areas, particularly vulnerable groups like the B40, how they are affected and how they respond to climate impacts such as heat waves that lead to heat stress and flooding. All these varying degrees of local action and vulnerability must be assessed and recognized. So this is what I think that's happening. Yeah.
Nadia, I hear the urgency in your voice, and I'm wondering whether the same urgency is being shared by the people who can help move the needle for areas like Klang, for instance. Who, in your opinion, is not listening? Who, in your opinion, is not moving fast enough? Whose delays in making those decisions could have an impact to the people who live in coastal areas like Klang?
I certainly think that, to echo what YB Charles has mentioned, it's about the political will on the federal level as well as the state level. Just to echo what YB has mentioned about the litigation phase that is coming up, in the recent IPCC Working Group 3 report, it just came out yesterday, they note that the climate litigation, it's not only mentioned in a summary for policymakers, there are over 2 pages on how litigation is shaping and enhancing climate governance. So there is a global climate litigation trend that is run by intergenerational partnership between the young and the older generation, such as the legal action taken by groups in the UK to sue the UK government for them to legally clarify their net zero plans instead of just vague policy statements that mean nothing. So I do fully support the idea of the design process of framing provisions within the Climate Change Act that supports strengthening our environmental rights in Malaysia. So I'm really glad to hear that there are a legal action in plan or in the pipeline for the citizens in Klang over climate inaction. I do believe that climate litigation could be one of the approaches to get the voices that is not hearing much.
Yeah, Nadia, what about this? I mean, because litigation, I mean, it's, often it's interest groups, working with lawyers, and they can do extraordinary amounts of things through the courts. But what about just direct action? I mean, the fact that in many parts of the world, politicians most fear people coming out in large numbers and making their voices known because that has an impact on their survival and their hold of power, right? Because it's often Politicians depend on our ignorance, our passivity, our apathy in order to not do the things they need to do. What signs do you see that the sentiment on the ground, that ordinary people are fed up and want to see action and are going to take measures to make sure that politicians do their job?
I think certainly it comes back to our democratic action as well. Like I mentioned in the seminar itself, climate change needs to become an electoral agenda. We need to vote the people who can do the job well. It's not just the matters of, we need the people who has the kind of background. We need climate leadership. And for to do that, we need to elect the people into power. And if we don't do that, then we will forever getting the subpar sort of actions that we've been seeing, the policy statements in our policies. It's just very disappointing, I would say. And I do believe that we could follow countries like, for example, in Germany, who has managed to garner enough power. The Green Party has managed to garner enough power. For example, in the USA, during the Biden and Harris election, so they have used climate change as an electoral agenda to push the election going. So I think this is what is needed here in Malaysia as well.
Nadia, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. Ili Nadia Zulfaqar from Klima Action Malaysia, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Good night.
Good night.